From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Death is something many of us try to avoid thinking about as much as possible, but everyone gets there sooner or later. And there are some new trends in how we mark the end of life. Biodegradable caskets, digital memorials, and back-to-basics funerals. Are we becoming more comfortable with the facts of death or just changing how we cope? This hour on Point, we're talking about how we die and how we mark our lives. You can join us on air or online. Have you planned a funeral, a memorial in the past? Were you drawn to eco-friendly options, and how did you cope with the cost? Was it meaningful to you? Joining me now from New York is Amy Cunningham. She's funeral director at Greenwood Heights Funeral and Cremation Services in Brooklyn, New York, where she specializes in eco-friendly burials. She is a former magazine writer and became a funeral director at the age of 57. She blogs at the Inspired Funeral. And get this, she just returned from the International Cemetery, Cremation, and Funeral Association Convention in Las Vegas. Amy Cunningham, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Jessica, it's so great to be with you and your listeners.
Glad to have you on. I just got to start here. What exactly do you look at and find at the International Cemetery, Cremation, and Funeral Association Convention? Are there new products out?
Oh, yes. There's a showroom about the size of a half a football stadium with every conceivable kind of casket, urn, cremation equipment, and lots of animated people talking about the funeral biz and what's happening next.
So what is happening now? Can you walk us through some of the biggest new trends in funerals?
I saw four trends while I was there, Jessica. Cremation is the choice for now 70% of families in Western states. And the rates out here in the East, among populations initially slow to embrace cremation, they're climbing fast. So cremation is not going away. The second thing I noticed is that despite those high cremation rates, the return to natural burial in a shroud or a biodegradable casket is beginning to draw not only the Whole Foods baby boomer, but it's becoming attractive to anyone wishing to preserve habitat and embrace a back-to-basics approach. The third thing I thought was pretty interesting is that women are noticeably present, colorful, dynamic people in the end-of-life business these days, and they're shaking things up.
How's that?
And then How's that?
Yeah. You mean more women funeral directors?
Absolutely. 50% of mortuary schools now are female, the kids attending, and women are having more assertive and powerful voices in what was, as you know, an old boys' family, five-generation kind of network for a long time.
And sorry, I interrupted you. Your fourth trend?
The fourth thing is funeral directors want to convince consumers that their funerals would be better and express their personality and their values if they planned them in advance. Consumers can actually save money by doing this. If you think about it, there's an assumption in this country that funerals are way too expensive. But would you walk into a car dealership and say, I need to buy a car in the next hour? Would that be the most sensible way to make a decision?
No.
So it's not always possible because death can be abrupt and horrific and impossible to expect. And you can't pre-plan a funeral like that. But most of us are dying slowly, and we could do very well by having a visit with a kindly funeral director.
We'll get into that a little more later. It's an interesting frustration or anxiety people have going in and dealing with their own death early. But let's first stay focused on this question of some of the new funeral and burial options. Would you tell us what some of the more eco-friendly burial options are these days? You mentioned shrouds. What else?
Shrouds are fantastic and appropriate for cremations. And even when someone dies in a hospital or a home, the deceased can be shrouded by the family, bathed, shrouded, and the funeral director can remove the deceased at that point and take them back into the funeral home. Natural caskets can also be combined with the use of shrouds. And then these wonderful new cemeteries all over the United States, there are at least 100 of them listed, and the Green Burial Council certifies them. And they're places where property is being protected by placing deceased people in them.
It's so you're hard protecting
to get
the
your
earth.
Mind around.
You're protecting the earth by burying people there, and then you're saying developers can't build there? Or
that's correct. And a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to go back to burial because it takes up so much land. But in these cemeteries, you're saving land.
Interesting. If you'll pause there for a moment, I'd like to bring another voice into the conversation. Gary Latterman joins us from Atlanta. He's professor of religion and chair of the religion department at Emory University. He's also author of Rest in Peace, A Cultural History of Death and the Funeral Home in 20th Century America. Gary, welcome back to On Point.
Great to be here. Thanks a lot.
Let's start off with a big question. How do you think changing funerals, this trend to eco-burials, shrouds, reflect the different values of the baby boomers?
It's certainly a matter of people really customizing their funerals, people who are taking charge and wanting to personalize the last rites. And simultaneously, you have an institution that had had a great control over how people took care of their dead, really before the 1960s, that is willing to accommodate and indeed profit off of a more diverse sort of consumer range of tastes.
Listener writes in, named Bob, writes in on our website and says, the cemetery next to where I grew up was a wonderful childhood playground, but I never quite got the rituals that went on there. Cooped up in a box, dark suits, perpetual lawn care, all things I hate. And then he goes on to say that he's going to request cremation and that his ashes get flushed down the toilet. My final journey to the sea shall be familiar and comforting. So, Gary, I mean, there's obviously some humor there. And I'm curious if there's a willingness by a generation that's somehow more empowered to change what seems like a fixed tradition, a fixed ritual that people used to be afraid of messing with a funeral. Why are people more comfortable personalizing now?
So much changed after the 1960s. It may be cliche to talk about the 60s as a pivotal point, but I think this is a clear case in point where older institutions, older traditions, older conventions really were no longer satisfying. And people were able to find ways to get around those traditions and innovate and create new kinds of traditions, new kinds of rituals, really in the 70s and 80s. And cremation really helped to start that trend. Because that was an important moment as well, when the cremation rates really started to skyrocket in the later 1960s, really after the book by Jessica Mitford, The American Way of Death. That changed the landscape and the way people talked about death and the idea that there could be options.
Amy, we're talking about options. One of the options I read about that I found surprising was something called a reef ball. What is a reef ball and why would I want to be one?
There's a man who has a company called Eternal Reefs, and he takes the cremated remains and mixes them with a kind of concrete, then lowers them into the ocean to support coral reef. A lot of families love this, and they accompany him on the journey to put it into the ocean.
You mean they scuba dive in with the...
Yes. Yep.
Remains.
Wow. Yes, they do.
And this is good for the coral reef, just to be clear.
That's what he says. Yes, it is.
Is this common?
It gives them a place to grow. No, it's not common. It's a little bit expensive, but a lot of families are doing it not only for their deceased relatives, but for their pets.
Wow. So, Gary, why are people making that kind of choice to be in the ocean or be? Is that about being somewhere familiar for them?
I think it's part, as you said at the beginning of the show, that it's tied to a kind of eco-environmental consciousness that is shaping and influencing the culture of death. quite strongly. There are other things influencing the cultures of death that we see in America today, but certainly the idea that your cremated remains can kind of go back to nature and to, you know, both be a positive kind of productive element in that environment, but that it also is symbolic of the personality, the kind of commitments of the people.
So if I die sudden, please don't tell anyone. There ain't nobody needs to know that I'm gone. Just put me in a pine box 6 feet underground. And don't be calling no minister.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about new trends in funerals, burials, how we mark life and death. We're joined this hour by funeral director and blogger Amy Cunningham and by religion professor Gary Latterman, author of Rest in Peace, A Cultural History of Death and the Funeral Home in 20th Century America. Welcome back, guys. I'd like to start off by listening for a moment to the sound of U.S. company SpaceX sending the first commercial spacecraft to the International Space Station in May 2012. That craft also carried the ashes of actor James Doohan, who played Scotty in the original Star Trek TV series. Here's the sound of the launch of the rocket with Scotty's ashes.
3, 2, 1. 0. And launch of the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket as NASA turns to the private sector to resupply the International Space Station.
Little unusual, but we saw something a little more a down-to-earth version of that when Hunter S. Thompson had his ashes launched from a cannon here on Earth. So the personalized funeral obviously is taking new forms. Why, Gary, are people personalizing, and is it becoming something more people are thinking about during their healthy years?
More and more people are thinking about pre-planning, and I think that's one of the more important changes or shifts that we're seeing is the increasing number who really want to try to plan their own funeral and not leave it, as we were saying earlier, you know, as a last-minute thing that all of a sudden you have to make this huge purchase. So that's a part of it. I also think just consumer society or consumer culture generally, you know, we expect to have options in the clothes we shop for and the food we eat. And it may be a little off-putting or odd to think, well, death, you know, participates as a part of consumer culture and that those tastes would transfer to, you know, how we think about, you know, disposing of the dead.
I wanted to ask, does it seem in a culture that's been called a culture of narcissism, a place where we're more self-focused, that this is just another way to express ourselves and even retain control after we're dead?
Absolutely. I think that's part of it. But I also, as someone who studies religion, sees a lot of religious elements to this, even though we're certainly not talking about Catholic ritual or sort of Protestant sensibilities. But this is still religious, you know, issues about how we confront death, how we confront the corpse, how we make sense of death. And it's no longer the church that is kind of authorizing what resources people have. It's very much, I think, in large part, popular culture, as well as our consumer culture.
We feel more willing to redefine it for ourselves. Amy, what are some of – we talked about green funerals. What are some of the trends in personalized funerals you've seen, or even not trends, but some of the more unusual personalized choices?
Well, I think people are choosing readings that express their love of whatever it was they loved in life, be it nature or you're seeing secular things read. I liked what Gary was saying about clergy having a little bit less, it still being a religious statement, but clergy in many instances is a bit more out of control. Today, when a family comes to see a rabbi or a minister to plan a funeral if they're in a religious or engaged in a house of worship. In the old days, the minister would say, or rabbi, you know, what do you want me to say? Today, clergy is more apt to ask who's going to speak and how many family members will be delivering eulogies. And then a Pew study, right, Gary, you may have more recent statistics, but a Pew study showed that at least 40% of Americans are unchurched and choosing celebrants, ethical culture leaders, more secular types of people, or managing it completely on their own.
They're defining their own spiritual experience.
Yes, they are, and they want that control and are entitled to it.
Let's take a call now. Ron is calling from Mirror Lake, New Hampshire. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you for taking my call. I've listened for many years. This is the first time I've actually had someone pick up the phone and take my call. I appreciate that.
Well, we're glad to hear from you.
Yes. As I was telling the party who picked up the phone, I've had two serious bouts of cancer and a couple of superficial bouts. And having been born into the Catholic faith, and and now in my mid 60s, I've had a chance to think about these issues quite a bit. And I applaud the openness and the changes to greener solutions My thought, however, is you may laugh at this, but I'm quite serious. I think as a species, we are pretty arrogant in thinking that we can invest all this space and or even gas and cremation to deal with the 7 to 14 billion people on this planet. I just don't think that's smart or wise when in prehistoric times, we were just like all the other species. We were just left to the scavengers. We were part of the cycle. So
you want to be left to the scavengers?
Well, not exactly. Not exactly. But I think one of the greenest ways to deal with all these people, like myself, is do you remember the movie Fargo that was out about 10, 12 years ago? Do you remember that climatic scene at the end where the pregnant state cop confronts the bad guy? What's he doing to Steve Buscemi at that point?
You want to be put in a wood chipper then?
Well, that's not exactly the greenest way they portrayed it, because that was a gas-powered chipper. But if you hook it up to a panel, a solar panel, as a regular service, that's about as green as you could go. And then make those remains available to whoever could use them. Lobstermen, fishermen, you name it. But I think that's what I've left instructions for. This is my second plan, by the way. My first plan, which my wife vetoed, is I was going to do it in the Viking fashion. I'm a sailor, and I told her put in bales of straw and flowers and trod me in a can of gas and put the boat on autopilot and send me over the horizon and push a button. And she thought about that for a second, and she said, no, the minute you draw your last breath, that boat's going on Craigslist. It's just too valuable to put you in. So that left me to this other option, but,
So you ultimately decided you want to be recycled for fuel, fertilizer, in a solar-powered wood chipper.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, come to chum. Let's do it like we did in prehistoric times.
You go, Ron. Thank you for calling in. Amy, let me just ask you quickly, is the way we bury people actually Earth-friendly right now? He says he wants to be recycled. I go into a mortuary and look at the caskets because I've had to do this, and you see these elaborate, huge caskets that look like they're made of metal. I mean, do those ever decompose if you go that way?
They collapse and don't decompose. And every year in this country, the conventional funeral business buries 104,000 tons of steel, enough to rebuild the Golden Gate Bridge.
Wow.
And it's unfortunate.
Okay, let's bring in for a moment Esmeralda Kent. She is in Las Vegas, and she's a former costume designer, now maker of biodegradable burial shrouds. Her company is called, and I hope I don't maul this, Kincarico? Green burying products, based in San Francisco. And she's also in Vegas attending that same conference, the International Cemetery, Cremation, and Funeral Association Convention. Esmeralda Kent, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jessica. Hello, everyone.
So you are a maker of burial shrouds. Would you explain to us exactly what is different with a shroud versus coffin burial? Is it just the body in the shroud straight into the earth?
Well, I started working in California's first green cemetery, Fernwood, in 2004. And at the time, all of the shrouds were religious. And we were one of the first cemeteries to ever offer straight in the ground, no vault, no casket burial. And so there were no secular shrouds. And people would bring in quilts and shawls and all of that. And they really were difficult for funeral homes to deal with, you know, that are busy. And I mean, in different religions, in Muslim religion and Jewish religion, people know how to wrap shrouds, but for environmental purpose, we were kind of making it up as we went along. So as a costume designer, I saw what we needed. We needed to be able, it needed leakage protection, needed handles, it needed some way to lower it. And so we make a kind of hybrid shroud that's halfway between a casket and a piece of cloth, which is what a shroud is. But it has a lot more. It looks like a plain shroud from the top, but it's very sophisticated. And so we offer many other products that go along with it as well.
But the shroud, when you're buried in a shroud, is it, I imagine, one's return to earth happens much more quickly than if one is in even a very simple coffin.
Exactly. We call it 21st century death care because it's the quickest decomposition. Where in the 20th century, people were looking for eternal preservation. Now they're looking for rapid decomposition. Mm-hmm. And nothing biodegrades quicker than fabric, than a cloth shroud.
That's an interesting distinction. Also, no more embalming.
Well, also, and like you were...
People used to want to be embalmed and save the body, and now they want to return to Earth as quickly as possible.
And also, earlier people were talking about these heavy, you know, steel caskets, these even wood caskets. I mean, the reason that I'm so drawn to the shroud is that we sell online. We've been selling online since 2005. And someone can order a shroud online, have it sent to them in Laguna Beach, and they can stick it in their suitcase and fly across country to their mother's funeral in Florida. And it's just light. It's easy. It takes up no space.
I guess you can pre-order your own shroud and carry it around with you too, just in case. Let's go for a moment to the phones. Clark is calling from Exmoor, Virginia. Clark, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jessica. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
You're a funeral director?
Yes, I'm a third generation funeral director. So I have been in this business all my life. My grandmother and grandfather were one. They started a business in 1948. And then my father and his wife were funeral directors. I had an uncle and his wife that were funeral directors, and I followed suit into the business. And it has really changed over the years, especially in the last 20 years. It's gone to probably 50% cremation. And as a matter of fact, my wife, unfortunately, passed away 9 months ago, and she had created a beautiful garden right in our backyard, and her wishes were to be cremated and spread in her garden so she could become part of that garden. And it's a funny thing. I planted some flowers in that garden last year that did not bloom, and this spring they're blooming like it's unbelievable, and I'd like to believe that, you know, she had a little bit to do with that.
I don't know.
But anyway, that is also my wish. I am going to be cremated and spread into that garden as well.
Clark, thank you for the call. It's fascinating that you're seeing the same trend, and I applaud your plans for the future. Amy, may I ask you, he plans to be buried in the garden. He said his wife was. I bet a lot of people would like that. And some people would like to be buried in shrouds, perhaps. But aren't there legal barriers to some of these things?
Crematories require a rigid container. So someone could be shrouded and the funeral service could take place with the shrouded body. Esmeralda has beautiful photos on her website of how you can display gorgeous flowers all over the shroud, still seeing the silhouette of the body beneath. So that's a wonderful thing about shrouds. They're so vivid, and there's just nothing quite like it.
We'll get back to Esmeralda to talk about her shrouds in just a moment. Amy, back to you for a moment. Is it
yes, the
correct
legality.
That, yes. Can you be buried in your garden in just any state? I don't think you can.
Well, you have to have that approved by your municipality, and it has to be on the lien of your property. But back to the legality of shrouds, I wanted to return to that, and Esmeralda may want to chime in as well. In green cemeteries, in these native areas where habitat is being preserved, shrouds are welcomed, and the family participates in a way at these ceremonies with the lowering of the body in the shroud, the shoveling of the soil. You've never seen anything quite like it. They walk out still sad that there has been a loss in the family, but so elevated about the experience they've had, and it's very powerful.
Gary, Esmeralda was talking earlier about the fact that we used to want to embalm bodies, and now there's this trend to returning to Earth as quickly as possible. In just a minute or so, if you could keep it tight, what is sorry,
okay.
What is that trend about?
Oh boy, that's a long story.
You can start.
Well, embalming really became the foundation of the funeral industry after the Civil War, and it was the main driver in you know, turning a few funeral homes around different towns and villages into a, you know, multi-billion-dollar industry in the 20th century. And that all changed after Jessica Mitford's book and as the sort of 60s generation came of age. Okay. So that toward the end of the 20th century, it's a whole different landscape.
They lay me 'neath the green, green grass of home.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about new trends in funerals, burials, how we mark life and death. We're joined this hour by funeral director and blogger Amy Cunningham, by religion professor Gary Latterman, author of Rest in Peace, A Cultural History of Death and the Funeral Home in 20th Century America, and by Esmeralda Kent, maker of biodegradable shrouds with her company Kinkaraco Green Burying Products. If we can all pause for a moment and pay tribute to this wonderful television show, the HBO drama 6 Feet Under. It ran from 2001 to 2005. I imagine all of you recall, those of you who are joining us, that it chronicled the lives of a family that runs a funeral home in Los Angeles. We're going to listen for a moment to the pilot episode. The patriarch has just died, and his two sons are having an argument about the appropriate level of grief and ceremony at his burial.
Well, I'm sure you just would have tossed him out with the garbage. It may seem weird to you, but there is a reason behind everything that we do here. We provide people with a very important and sacred service at the darkest time in their lives, because maybe they don't want to make a spectacle of themselves, because maybe they prefer to grieve in private.
Why? Why does it have to be such a secret? It's nothing to be ashamed of.
We are not ashamed of it. We're talking about it here. So, Esmeralda, this show has special meaning to you. I understand it helped you come to the shroud business.
It actually did, Jessica. I actually, in 2000, on election night 2000, my mother, I was a costume designer, and I had to rush to get to my mother before she passed in Los Angeles, and I just grabbed 9 yards of silk to take with me, and my mother actually died in my arms, and I shrouded her by some kind of of genetic memory of how to prepare my dead, and it changed my life completely. And 3 years later, I saw 6 Feet Under, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go into funeral service, and as a result, I did start working in the First Green Cemetery, and by, it's like art imitating life, the production of 6 Feet Under purchased my prototype shroud and used it in the Green Burial episode, and I got to be on the set as the shroud wrangler and meet all my favorite actors. It was fantastic.
It sure does sound like it was meant to be. I'd like for all of us to listen for a moment to what Sue has to say. She's calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you. I co-founded a natural burial company with a woman named Ruth Foss about 8 years ago in Arlington, Massachusetts, because we were just very, as we learned more about what happens to our dead and the way that we are buried, we both felt that it really didn't reflect our values. So we wanted to offer people a chance to think more creatively about their death and dying and to be more engaged in the process. So one of the first things I did was paint my own casket, a pine box, basically. And the process of doing that was so utterly meaningful for me. It really gives you a chance to reflect on your life. I can't imagine not wanting to plan my end of life celebration.
And so do you allow your customers to paint their own coffins?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, we had a studio for years that only got used a few times, but we offered cardboard boxes if people wanted to be cremated. They could paint or collage on them. They could get their family members involved. And I think the ritual of engaging around these activities was healing and you know, really wonderful for people.
Thank you, Sue. Amy, I have to say that one's new to me. So I imagine, though, you have seen people request maybe urns in the shape or with labeled with their favorite baseball team or that sort of thing. Have you heard of painting your own box before?
Yes, I have. And I love what Sue related, because a funeral director can bring that cardboard cremation casket to the house. It works really well with the death of a grandparent to engage the children in the decorating of the cremation casket, because sometimes kids don't know how to grieve. And there are photographs of my blog from Olivia Barham, her website. She's a death midwife out in L.A., and they're the ones who, in my mind, really got this going. The women of the National Home Funeral Alliance often encourage people to decorate their caskets, and it's terrific.
Gary, I had interrupted you earlier. Does this track with the move away from wanting to be embalmed to wanting to return to the earth as quickly as possible and paint your passage as you go?
It's symptomatic of that larger trend of diversification of, in a sense, no holds barred. Really, anything goes. That's not just a signal of it becoming secular. What the person on the phone was just mentioning was really, I think she would agree, is a very sacred kind of religious involvement in one of the most important sort of moments, transitions of anyone's life. I also just wanted to make sure I give a shout out to Willie Nelson, whose more recent release is called Roll Me Up and Smoke Me When I Die. and so, again, this is like people are thinking in all kinds
ashes?
Of creative ways of what to do with the remains of the dead.
It brings to mind Keith
very
Richards.
Standard. What's
Didn't,
that?
It brings to mind Keith Richards, who allegedly... took his dad's ashes and snorted them up his nose.
Right, and then he said that was a lie. But there's a lot these urban legends around these kinds of creative ways of consuming, in some form, your loved ones. And, you know, that would be inconceivable 40 years ago.
Amy, back to you. Funeral homes are now setting up kiosks in malls. So I guess you can pick out a casket on your way to Banana Republic? Why?
You can. We're bringing death into the culture, and we're seeing a major shift today with people. Death cafes are
that?
Very successful in cities where folks get together just on a very informal basis to discuss their anxieties about death, getting organized for death. signing their healthcare proxies, and also we're seeing TV shows like HBO's Getting On, a very dark comedy. There was Showtime's Time of Death, a docu-series just showing how people die in this nation, and apparently we're ready to look at it.
Finally.
Square in the face.
Amy, there's also a trend I've read about with tech burials where you can put some kind of computer chip in someone's burial plot. I can't imagine what that would pull up. Would it pull up your whole Facebook history and all the tweets you sent over your entire life?
I hope that takes off. I met with a man yesterday at the ICCFA, and it's a little barcode on a enamel chip, and you put it in an existing tombstone. And then if you hold your iPhone up to the barcode, you can get the obituary.
Well, so you can travel through, walk through a cemetery and read about everyone in it, in theory.
That's correct.
It's interesting. Esmeralda, on a more sentimental note, I understand that one of the favorite qualities of the shroud is a pocket people can use. Would you tell us about that?
Yes, we, you know, there's an old adage that burial shrouds have no pockets, but actually we created the heart pocket, and it was, it's created on the over the heart. There's a face cloth that covers the face on the shroud that goes over the chest, and people put poetry, they put cookies, they put a rosary, anything that was very meaningful. And a lot of times, like we were talking about, not only is green burial a huge trend, but home funeral is a huge trend of people keeping the body directly from hospice and preparing the body, the family preparing the body at home, keeping the body on dry ice, and then either taking the body themselves to the crematory. I think one thing we didn't address here is that there aren't that many laws in around funeral service. Everyone thinks, oh, that everything must be against the law, like putting ashes in the garden or whatever. You only need a funeral director in 8 states in this country. You can bury on your own property in almost every state. There's not very many laws at all, but we've been led to believe from the industry that we can't do anything. But anyway, the heart pocket is a very personalized way of the family helping prepare and washing the body. We make a burial wash and putting everything that's personal inside and wrapping it up. And it's a very beautiful thing. And I just wanted to say that we have many people that call up that are in hospice. They're ordering their shroud from their hospice bed themselves. I get chills every time it happens because it's so profoundly brave and so just so amazingly beautiful.
Well, I have to say, when my own father died, we were all under the impression that his body had to be taken as quickly as possible because of legal regulations. So it is interesting to know that there is more flexibility in the law than we had at least I had originally assumed. I want to go to a call from Maria, who's calling in from Ashford, Connecticut. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for being with us.
In my family, we agreed a long time ago to go with the cremation, and we did that with my mother, and we took her to my old country. And everybody's going to be doing the same because not only we like the idea, but for the economical side, it's more, it's good for us.
That makes sense. Thank you. Amy, is it more cost effective? I mean, sorry to be crass about it, but is it cheaper to be cremated than to be buried?
Generally, yes. Cremation is a bit more expensive if you don't have a service and have a direct cremation. But
it's less expensive.
Yes, it is. We like to teach people, though, that green burial can almost rival that expense. The graves in green cemeteries are usually less expensive than conventional cemetery spaces, and it's a very affordable thing.
Amy, Can you get specific? How much does a cremation cost these days, approximately?
Well, that's one thing I would encourage everyone to go out and do when they're healthy and well, is collect the price lists of funeral homes in their town and just see how wildly they can vary. They're corporate funeral homes, they're family-run funeral homes. It's all over the map.
But we have some statistics, and I'm looking at something that says cremation costs around $1,600 if you're not including price of interring at a site or the ceremony around it. And the median cost of a funeral, not including the plot or the fees for the cemetery or the monument, is around $7,000. So $1,600 versus $7,000. Does that sound right?
A green burial would be less than that $7,000, but that cremation price sounds about right to me.
Okay, let's go to Barbara, who's calling from Washington, Vermont. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, I had a friend who was very poor and planned her own funeral, shopped around for crematorium, found one for $250. A friend made a casket. We loaded her into the casket, didn't use a shroud, wrapped her in a quilt that her mom had made, and put her right in the casket from her hospital bed, put her in my truck, and took her to the crematorium. The whole thing, $250.
Wow. That is efficient and inexpensive and very thoughtful of her. Barbara, thanks for calling. Gary, is that sort of how they did it way back in the old days? It's like a return to the beginning?
There is that element, or this is a kind of return or a wished-for kind of nostalgia that this you can simplify the funeral and make it sort of more natural. I think that's a lot of the impulse. You see that also with birth and some of the rituals that people want to engage in around that transition. So it is very much an idealizing of the past, but also a kind of current desire to make it less expensive and continue to make it meaningful.
Amy, is it getting less expensive as one turns to these sort of more basic options?
Yes, it can be. It's all about options. There's a wide array and a menu of services that people can acquaint themselves with, and natural caskets, locally made, or you can buy a casket kit.
What's that?
And store it. It's a flat series of boards that can lay under your bed or be a bookshelf. If you Google around, you'll find all kinds of things.
But it's
that
a do-it-yourself casket?
Absolutely. They're out there.
Wow. You don't get them at IKEA, though, I guess. No?
No.
Not yet.
Not yet, right. Esmeralda, how much
is
a shroud burial generally?
Well, I've actually collected a list of how much every plot in every green cemetery is across the country, and they go from being free to there's one cemetery in downtown Los Angeles where the plot is $46,000.
Wow.
Must be on the beach or near the ocean.
It's not that close to the ocean.
Well, it's like,
oh, under the cathedral, maybe.
Hollywood. But most of the median cost of a green burial plot is about $1,500 to $2,500. That's about median. And the shroud can be anywhere from $299 to, we have very fancy shrouds that are embroidered silk called Mort Couture, and they go inside of a casket. Because not everybody wants the cheapest down and dirty thing. I mean, there's people that want something lined in lab. We
couture shroud. Have you lined it in fur?
Mort Couture.
Mort Couture, like mortuary. All right.
Yeah, to die for.
Truly. In so many ways. I have enjoyed this conversation. Thanks to all of you. I hope it provided some fodder, food for thought for our listeners. Amy Cunningham, thanks for joining us. She is funeral director at Greenwood Heights Funeral and Cremation Services in Brooklyn. She blogs at The Inspired Funeral. Gary Latterman, thanks to you. Gary is chair of the religion department at Emory and author of Rest in Peace, A Cultural History of Death and the Funeral Home in 20th Century America. And Esmeralda Kent makes shrouds, including couture shrouds, at Kinkariko Burial Products. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Coming up tomorrow, the HBO series Veep is back for a third season. We'll talk to its creator. I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.